Ukrainian-Russian forces battled out for control of a key city in the east. This while capital Kyiv becomes a target of a fresh missile strike. North Korea conducts its largest single missile test ever after the U.S. deploys a nuke-powered aircraft carrier for 3 days of joint drills with South Korea. Plus, tragedy in Bangladesh, dozens dead, hundreds injured as a massive blaze burns through a storage facility overnight. I'm Behruz Najafi. Welcome. As Russia's war in Ukraine grinds on, the eastern city of Severodonetsk has become the latest battle line in the conflict. Ukrainian president saying the clashes are being fought street by street. Volodymyr Zelensky says the situation remains extremely difficult in the strategic city. He says that cities in the eastern Donbas region are under constant airstrikes and artillery and missile fire, but Ukrainian forces are holding their ground. Severodonetsk is the last Ukrainian stronghold in the Lugansk region. The war in Ukraine has taken a heavy civilian toll. In the latest such fatalities, at least 11 civilians were reported killed in the Lugansk and Donetsk region and the southern city of Mykolaiv. Russian forces redeployed to eastern and southern Ukraine after pulling back from other areas, including around the capital. But missile strikes continue to rock Kyiv. At least one person was hospitalized in the latest such explosion on Sunday. Well, Johnny Miller joined us a short while ago from the site of a fresh missile attack in the eastern Ukrainian city of Donetsk, and he told us where the missiles were coming from and why.
I'm in a district of Donetsk. Last night, about 9 o'clock, the city was rocked by loud explosions. I'm at the scene right now. Now, scenes like this are nothing new in Donbass, but particularly around this area, it is new as people are walking around in disbelief about what's happened. The truth here in Donetsk is that the Ukrainian army has been shelling civilian areas and has been doing so for the last 8 years, targeting and killing its own civilians. Most people here in Donetsk say they no longer want to be part of Ukraine, and increasingly they want to join Russia, and this is one of the major reasons why, of Ukraine shelling and killing its own people. Over 10,000 people have been killed in the last 8 years. Over 100 children. A five-year-old girl was killed just a few days ago while she was sitting in her apartment watching TV. And it's a story here that's very important to be told in order to understand this conflict. If I was a journalist standing in the west of the country now, no doubt I'd be covering Russian strikes. But here in the east, in the separatist-held areas, it's Ukrainian strikes. And it's increasingly some countries, at least behind the scenes, call for negotiation or for Ukraine to cede some territory. It's very important for the people here in Donbass and the separatists here and why they rose up and why they continue to fight. It's very important for their views to be heard as well. Well, miraculously, nobody was killed in these strikes. There's reports that 10 people have been wounded and one child. It happened about 9 o'clock, so most people were in their apartments. But that's a rarity. Almost every day here, people are killed by the shelling. It's not even really a story that journalists cover every day because it's just simply part of daily life. And incredibly, in the Western media, this story is not being told. Indeed, this has been going on for the last 8 years here in Donbass. It's a reason why, one of the main reasons why the separatists rose up and continued to fight. And as I said, their views, the people here, their views, and that fact that the Ukrainian army has been killing its own people for the last 8 years, that fact needs to be borne into mind, and it's very important to tell that story in order to understand why this conflict is happening.
Russian President Vladimir Putin says that Moscow is destroying U.S. weapons sent to Ukraine by the dozen. He was responding to a question about a U.S. decision to send new arms to Kyiv. During the interview, Putin said that Russia is easily coping and targeting the shipments. Since the beginning of the Russian offensive in Ukraine in late February, the United States has sent several arms shipments as part of a huge $40 billion in military and financial aid to Kyiv. Russia says the U.S. is seeking to wage a proxy war by supplying unprecedented amounts of military aid to Ukraine. time now for the news review. North Korea has fired 8 short-range ballistic missiles toward the sea off its east coast. South Korea says the missiles were fired from an area of the North Korean capital city. In recent weeks, North Korea has test-fired a range of ballistic missiles, including its largest intercontinental ballistic missile. Now, the latest one came just a day after South Korea and the U.S. wrapped up their first combined military drills involving an American aircraft carrier in more than 4 years. North Korea has criticized their previous joint drills as an example of Washington's continued hostile policies toward Pyongyang, despite its talk of diplomacy. So, North Korea missile test and U.S. and South Korea, that's the story. Now, joining me will be a couple of people, our own Jennifer Chang in Seoul, and also with us will be Andrew Leung. He's an independent political analyst joining us from Hong Kong. So, Jennifer, this is the largest missile test so far by North Korea, and this is despite all the warnings from here and there, especially from the U.S., not to do that, and the U.S. itself doing what North Korea never wants to do, joint military drills with South Korea. So tell us about how South Korea has reacted to this.
Well, South Korea, of course, is alarmed because they were hoping that through their show of force with the U.S., they would be able to stop North Korea from doing these types of tests. The South Koreans just wrapped up a joint drill with the U.S., their navies, the two countries' navies, did that in the waters off Okinawa, Japan, and it involved the USS Ronald Reagan, a nuclear-powered aircraft carrier. And it's the first time this type of drill has taken place in about 4 years, so this was a huge show of force. But the North Koreans, instead of stopping their missile tests, they went ahead and did their biggest so far, involving 8 short-range ballistic missiles. And this, of course, has the South Koreans and the Japanese alarmed. The Japanese defense minister said it was an unprecedented missile test. Mm-hmm. And this follows very shortly after the May 25th test in which North Korea fired 3 ballistic missiles, including an ICBM, the Hwasong-17, which can nuke the U.S. mainland, as well as their KN-23, which can nuke South Korea. So that had been considered the biggest missile test so far. That involved 3 ballistic missiles, but now we have 8 ballistic missiles. Right. And it's just getting worse and worse here, the tensions because of the U.S. and the U.S.'s insistence on trying to make the North not do any tests through shows of force with South Korea.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for that. Now, Andrew, let us know your opinion about what's going on, really, because we have the two sides accusing each other of provoking the other side. I mean, North Korea says that do not conduct your military drills, get your force out of the region, don't do this. The West does it, the U.S. in particular I'm talking about. And then we have the U.S. Warning North against testing more missiles, and the North says that this is deterrence. We have to do it. So who's provoking who?
Well, as I said on this panel so many times, that the North Koreans have completely lost interest, let alone confidence, in the so-called talks led by the United States, because the United States always wants to have it all without giving anything as any, even the minimum concession right at the beginning. Secondly, the North Koreans are now, I think, completely hooked on the idea that it's better to develop their own nuclear deterrence and also the missile delivery systems. And, of course, the immediate reaction is against this quite large-scale military exercises right at its front door. So in a way, this is a warning against the United States and South Korea. But on the other hand, the North Koreans are taking advantage of this, the present situation, whereby the United States is increasingly distracted in over Ukraine and also domestically all sorts of problems. And then, of course, the the main agenda is kind of anti-China strategies. So the North Koreans are taking advantage of this to perfect their missile delivering systems. So that's what we're seeing. I mean, this is a typical security spiral where one side doesn't trust another, and each side is upping up the ante, leading to a worsening situation.
Mm-hmm. And Jennifer, what about the people? I mean, the governments, they have their own reasons, and they take action rightly or wrongly. What about the people of the two Koreas? How do they feel about this?
Well, of course, the people of the two Koreas are getting alarmed by all this tension. The last thing they want is another Korean War, because it was the civilians of both Koreas that bore the brunt, the casualties and the deaths in the Korean War. And this current South Korean president is far too hawkish for many South Koreans. He barely won the presidential election here by just 0.73%. And his competitor has already been elected a lawmaker. So this is despite the presidential election defeat. And the South Koreans, you never know when they are going to turn on the Korean president for being too hardline. He's very new. He just started his term on May 10th, and he has 5 long years ahead of him. Mm-hmm. And if tensions continue to rise like this, we could see a backlash from the South Korean voters.
Andrew, let's have your forecast for the future. You mentioned lack of trust from both sides, and then we have North Korea talking about thinking of defending itself, so they say this is necessary to do, despite the U.S. Condemning it. And then we have this the new president in South Korea, as Jennifer was mentioning. So given all the situation and circumstances, is denuclearization possible on the Korean Peninsula?
Well, I don't think that there is any immediate chance of denuclearizing with the deepening mistrust between the United States and North Korea. But as far as North Korea is North Korea, but South Korea's politics, as pointed out by your other speaker, is also complicated, because apart from this kind of rhetoric, a saber rattling against North Korea, which is its neighbor, this doesn't sit well with the South Korean electorate, because they want a peaceful life. They don't want to invade North Korea and force them a unification on South Korean terms. That's simply not practicable. And also, this kind of drills between the United States and South Korea is not only directed at North Korea, but directed to China. Now, China, of course, is the South Korea's biggest trading partner. And there is a great deal of investments, South Korean investments in China. China is now also buying a lot of semiconductor products from South Korea. And that helps, that's a great boost to South Korea's economy. So this kind of rhetoric, saber rattling, threatening its largest trading partner, which is China, and its neighbor down south, North Korea, is extremely problematic as far as the South Korean voters are concerned. But that's the new president is dancing to the tune of the United States. But as pointed out, I mean, he would discover very soon that it's not very good politics.
Okay, thank you so much for the contribution input. Jennifer Chang, a correspondent in Seoul. Andrew Leung, independent public analyst in Hong Kong. Welcome back. Let's move on. Turkey is gearing up for another major incursion into northern Syrian territory despite international outcry. Ankara has launched several offensives already in the war-ravaged Arab country, and that under the pretext of fighting Kurdish militants there. But this time, Turkey's ties with the U.S. and Russia are at stake.
Tensions are once again rising in northern Syria as Turkey threatens to conduct a major military operation there. Ankara says it wants to establish a 30-kilometer safe zone along the Syrian border and push back terrorists. Turkey has long been fighting members of the People's Protection Units, YPG, a U.S.-backed Kurdish militia it deems a terrorist group. Since 2016, Turkey has carried out three major incursions inside the Syrian territory under the same pretext, the latest of which came in October 2019, which fell short of ending in creating the buffer zone Ankara was hoping for. In the meantime, Damascus has slammed the Turkish plan as an act of aggression and an extension of Ankara's policy of ethnic cleansing in the area.
Turkey has been notorious for smuggling oil and engaging in oil theft in Syria. It has been launching military operations into Syria. It is indeed shot down and killed Russian military members in Syria. So Turkey has ambitions to expand its political footprint and reconquer parts of Syria that it lost after World War I in the Sykes-Picot Act, which the French and the British carved up the Middle East after World War I.
Syria says the measures taken by Turkey have caused civilian casualties and done massive damage to public and private property, including critical infrastructure. Syria describes Turkey's offensive as a shameful act of aggression that has displaced dozens of families from their homes and villages.
Death toll from a fire and explosion at a shipping container depot in Bangladesh has hit 34. At least 300 others have also been injured, some critically. Casualty figures are expected to rise as firefighters are still trying to bring the flames under full control. The blaze broke out late Saturday at a container storage facility in a town some 40 kilometers from the key port city of Chittagong. Emergency crews were working to extinguish the fire when a massive explosion rocked the site. And with that, we come to the end of this news broadcast from Tehran.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is a part of a speech delivered on May 7th, 2021 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution on the occasion of the International Al-Quds Day. The leader of the Islamic Revolution, in his speech on the occasion of International Al-Quds Day, referring to the change in the balance of power in favor of Islamic world and Palestine, emphasized, I tell you with confidence the downward movement of the Zionist regime has started and will not stop.
Today, hope of achieving victory is stronger than ever. Today, the balance of power has swung in favor of the Palestinians. The Zionist enemy has become weaker year after year, while its army, which used to describe itself as the army which will never be defeated, has turned into an army which will never taste victory after its debacle in the 33-day war in Lebanon, and its experiences in 22-day and 8-day wars. As for its political condition, it has been forced to hold 4 elections in the space of 2 years. In terms of security as well, it continuously tastes defeat. Moreover, the increasing desire among Jews to emigrate from that land has become a source of embarrassment for that overconfident regime.
Every day we tell each other that this day will be the last, and tomorrow we all can go home free, and all this will finally end. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free. Palestine, tomorrow will be free.
Its serious endeavor to normalize relations with a few Arab countries, with the assistance of the US, is another sign of the decline of that regime. Of course, this will not help that regime in any way either. Tens of years ago, it established relations with Egypt, but since then it has become much weaker and much more vulnerable. Therefore, will the normalization of relations with a few weak and small countries be able to help that regime? Of course, those countries will not benefit from the relations either, as the Zionist regime will transgress against their properties and their land, and it will promote corruption and insecurity in their countries. Of course, these truths should not make others forget about their heavy duty.
Alhamdulillah, alhamdulillah, all praises to Allah, all praises to Allah.
Thank you.
the wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
This is the International Atomic Energy Agency, the IAEA. The Vienna-based agency is supposed to monitor compliance with the 1968 Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. The NPT has been described as the centerpiece of global efforts to prevent the spread of nuclear weapons, promote cooperation in the peaceful uses of nuclear energy, and to achieve the goal of nuclear disarmament. The IAEA is supposed to have technical and professional cooperation with NPT signatories away from politics. The Atomic Agency has had a high-profile role regarding Iran's nuclear energy program. In 2015, when Iran and the P5+1 struck a deal known as the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, the IAEA was tasked with monitoring Iran's compliance with the terms of the agreement. In many of its reports over the past years, the agency has said that it has found no evidence of any diversion in Iran's nuclear program. As the fate of the faltering 2015 deal remains increasingly unclear, the technical role and supposed independence of the atomic watchdog are being tested. In a recent report, the IAEA said Iran's stockpile of enriched uranium had grown to more than 18 times the limit allowed in the 2015 agreement. The agency also said Iran has failed to answer its remaining questions. Tehran described the IAEA's latest statements as one-sided, saying that it fails to reflect Iran's extensive cooperation with the agency.
The International Atomic Energy Agency seems to be succumbing to the same sort of takeover that the United States and the Anglo-Zionist Empire has been doing to so many other international organizations, such as, for example, in athletics, for example, in economics with the World Economic Forum, for example. All these organizations, they seem to want to control them.
Meanwhile, reports say Western countries lobbied by Israel are planning to push the International Atomic Energy Agency to criticize Iran at its upcoming meeting of the Board of Governors. Back in March, Rafael Grossi, the head of the International Atomic Energy Agency, visited Iran. The IAEA and Iran announced at the end of the visit that they had agreed on an approach for resolving remaining bilateral issues. The visit came as representatives from Iran and the P4+1 were trying to find a way to move forward in their negotiations aimed at reviving the 2015 deal. The talks are currently stalled, with Iran saying the United States is failing to make necessary political decisions. At this point, any stance by the Atomic Agency could have an important effect on the stalled talks. This week, Iran's top diplomat said Tehran and the agency's agreement in March was mutually satisfactory. He warned that political interference in the technical affairs of the agency is totally unconstructive. Amir Abdullahian's comments came ahead of a meeting of the IAEA's Board of Governors scheduled for June the 6th. Days left to the meeting, the IAEA chief has arrived in Israel after Tel Aviv released documents alleging Iran spied on the IAEA. Iran says Israel, which has refused to join the NPT and is believed to possess hundreds of nuclear warheads, hates the JCPOA and wants to derail the effort to revive it.
The problem with much of what the International Atomic Energy Agency has been doing is that it is trying to find excuses to really, I suppose, make out that the Iranian nuclear program is a military program And what the, one of the problems with the IAEA is they're not looking anywhere near as closely at the Israelis, who do have nuclear weapons. They tried to keep it secret, but Mordecai Vanunu blew the whistle in the Sunday Times here in Britain back in the 1980s and did a massive jail term for his, when he was kidnapped, actually, for his trouble. That they do have many nuclear weapons, probably something like 200, they say.
Reports say the United States and its Western allies, pushed by Israel, plan to pile pressure on Iran at the upcoming IAEA meeting. Tehran has warned that it would respond firmly and appropriately to any such move because Tehran has been cooperating based on the agreement reached in March. The fate of months of negotiations between Iran and the P4+1 seems to be at stake as a meeting of the IAEA Board of Governors draws close. Who would benefit from a possible collapse of the talks?
Prices in the Eurozone continued their march higher in May as the inflation rate hit a record high of 8.1%. This is the seventh consecutive month of record high inflation in the 19 countries that share the euro. The inflation in May is up from April's record high of 7.4% and higher than expectations of 7.8%. This comes after inflation prints from several major European economies surprised to the upside in recent days.
Yes, well, this trend has been going on for months now, and it has exceeded even the most negative predictions of Eurozone central banks and the European Central Bank.
German inflation came in at an annual 8.7% in May. It significantly outstripped analyst expectations of 8% and marked a sharp incline from the 7.8% seen in April. Germany is planning to ease pressure on consumers through a series of policies, including cheap monthly tickets for regional public transport between June and August and a discount for drivers at gas stations.
This is partly to blame on the energy crisis that is has been exaggerated by the ongoing war in Ukraine, but also on matters that are beyond Europe's reach, like the lockdown in China and also other factors in European economies.
French inflation also surpassed expectations in May to a notch record 5.8%, up from 5.4% in April. France's economy contracted in the first quarter of the fiscal year under the impact of soaring inflation. The economy shrank 0.2% from the previous quarter after last year's strong 6.8% recovery as the COVID-19 pandemic eased. Spanish consumer prices also jumped by an annual 8.5% in May, exceeding expectations of 8.1%. Inflation in the Eurozone is now four times more than the ECB target of 2%. Multiple factors have contributed to the rising inflation rate in the Eurozone. First and foremost is a rising energy price. Across the Eurozone, the record annual consumer price increase was driven by soaring energy costs, which hit 39.2%. That's up from 37.5% in April.
I think that it was all calculated in the decision-making process of the European leaders. I think most of the countries are now dealing with this extreme rise of gas and oil prices, especially oil, is hitting European consumers very hard. But the political pressure from the Eastern European countries and from the US, but also from big European countries, was for this oil embargo on Russia. And it was like a political, let's say, bet
The European Union leaders have struck a deal to ban the majority of Russian oil imports over Moscow's military operation in Ukraine. The agreement covers more than two-thirds of oil imports from Russia. The measure is expected to further push up energy prices. Then there are disruptions in the global supply chains. The world economy is still reeling from COVID-related bottlenecks, and the war in Ukraine has caused serious disruptions to global trade. And finally, COVID lockdowns in China have put further strain on the global economy.
So right now, central banks are in a somehow deadlock situation because there are no easy way out of this inflationary trend. There is also the risk of creating a recession if the rise in rates and the contraction of the expansion of the economy is very abrupt.
ECB President Christine Lagarde and Chief Economist Philip Lane, in a bid to contain inflation, have already announced certain measures, but economists doubt if they will be enough. Earlier this month, European Central Bank President Lagarde said she was anticipating a rate rise at the central bank's meeting in July. The move could cause another recession in the eurozone.
The Israeli regime is pressing ahead with its barbaric violence against Palestinians. Israeli military forces have shot and killed a Palestinian woman in the southern part of the occupied West Bank. The Palestinian Health Ministry identified the 31-year-old victim as Ghufran Haroun Hamed Warasne. The Tel Aviv regime claims the woman was trying to stab Israeli soldiers, but witnesses say that Warasne posed little threat to the soldiers. She had started a new job at a radio station 3 days prior to being killed.
This woman was apparently also a journalist, starting her first day of work. And it's hard for me to believe that this was someone attacking Israelis. This is an excuse. If they produced a knife, I can't imagine that it was the woman who had the wife. It was produced by the Israelis themselves.
The incident happened close to the Al-Arub refugee camp, located 15 kilometers south of Bethlehem. The Palestine Red Crescent Society said the Israeli forces prevented his medical staff from attending to Warasne. They only managed to attend her 20 minutes after she was injured. The killing comes amid rising tensions between Palestinians and Israeli forces in the occupied territories. Local and international rights groups have condemned what they call Israel's excessive use of force and shoot-to-kill policy against Palestinians.
They're being protected. The Israelis are being protected in the U.S. and most likely the rest of the Western countries. So are they being reckless? Well, if you live in a part of the world where you get the full information, yes, I think you could say that they're being reckless. But in fact, they're being permitted to continue their genocide and their recklessness without being held to account. This is the problem.
In recent weeks, Israel has stepped up its provocative moves against Palestinians. Far-right Israeli extremists, supported by the regime, have just held the controversial flag march in Al-Quds. Israelis raided in and around the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound. The march was aimed at celebrating the occupation and subsequent annexation of East Jerusalem in 1967, a move that has not been recognized by the international community. Some chanted racist slogans, including death to Arabs, and attacked Palestinian residents while backed by armed Israeli forces. Dozens of Palestinians were arrested across Al-Quds and the occupied West Bank a day earlier.
Well, everyone is asking that. And given the incitement that the Israelis are causing, the deliberate attempts to provoke Palestinians and to cause trouble and violence against Palestinians, then yes, it's very possible that the Palestinians will participate in an uprising. You could say there's an uprising right now. against Israeli violence and provocations.
It's believed that Israel is deliberately fanning the flames of violence across the occupied territories. The clashes at Al-Quds had sparked fears of another armed conflict, similar to an 11-day war in May last year, between Israel and the Gaza-based Palestinian resistance groups, including Hamas.
It's, until now, at a relatively low level, but it could get, if it becomes really popular, and then the Palestinians could make a major uprising against the Israelis. And frankly, it's one of the few things that might bring the kind of attention to them that they really need. The world needs to look at it. And as I told you, here in the U.S., we're not getting that view unless we know where to look.
Back in May, Israeli forces killed Al Jazeera TV correspondent Shuri Nabahle while she was covering a military raid on the northern city of Jenin in the occupied West Bank. Hundreds of Palestinians have been injured in raids by Israeli forces and settlers at the Al-Aqsa Mosque compound in occupied Al-Quds during the Muslim holy month of Ramadan.
Greek authorities impounded an Iranian flag tanker carrying oil earlier this month, citing U.S. sanctions on Iran. The United States later confiscated the oil on board. Iran's foreign ministry on Wednesday summoned the Greek charge d'affaires to protest the seizure of the Iranian flagged vessel and confiscation of crude cargo in the European country's territorial waters. The ministry condemned Greece's unacceptable surrender to illegal U.S. pressures and said the seizure of the cargo of the ship with the flag of the Islamic Republic of Iran was an example of international piracy.
Well, the Greek authorities have acted evidently under instructions from the United States, and probably they don't even have an explanation. They just executed what they were requested, as it always happens with countries that are under the patronage of the United States. So the situation is always the same. The United States decides who should be punished, and there are some executors.
Iran's Ports and Maritime Organization issued a statement also describing the move as an act of piracy that was in violation of international standards. According to the statement, the vessel had faced adverse weather conditions and experienced some technical problems which led it to call for assistance. Under international and technical regulations and standards, the state with the nearest coastline to the vessel calling for assistance due to safety threats, which was in this case Greece, should have cooperated by guiding the vessel to a place of safety where the problems could be resolved before sending it off on its international voyage. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has released a video of the recent seizure of two Greek oil tankers in the Persian Gulf over maritime violations. The video shows IRGC's heli-borne special forces boarding the Greek ships ahead of their seizure over violations in the waters of the Persian Gulf. Iran's foreign ministry said one of the vessels, the Delta Poseidon, was sailing international waters at the time, adding that the second tanker was near the Iranian coast when seized. The ministry also said nine Greeks were among the crews of both vessels, but did not give a number of the other sailors on board. Iran's Ports and Maritime Organization said on Saturday that the crews of the two Greek oil tankers are not detained but are aboard the vessels and in good health. U.S. State Secretary Antony Blinken labeled the seizure as unjustified, calling for the release of the tankers and their crews. France, too, called it, quote, a serious violation of international law, while making no mention of the seized Iranian tanker. The seizure of an Iranian oil tanker comes as talks for the revival of the 2015 deal remain stalled.
Well, evidently they've calculated that exerting what they call the maximum pressure on Iran is the necessary thing to do in order to obtain the maximum during the negotiations. It is something that it's difficult to evaluate, but evidently is not a friendly move. Is an indication of the fact that for them Iran still is under sanctions and therefore to be excluded from international trade in energy, in the energy sector.
The U.S. administration claims it wants to see the JCPOA restored, but actions speak louder than words.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily round the clock for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, FM, and satellite. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020 UTC. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 MHz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and Iransat or Bat 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثتُ لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, "I have been sent to complete noble manners."
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to For a Better Life with me, Javed Akbari. Well, in the previous episode, we talked about a roadmap which the Quran provides every human being, every obedient human being, every individual. As I said, there are two groups of people. One group of people is rebellious. They rebel against God, and the other group of people is fearful. They fear to stand before their Lord. They are those people who, because of fear of Allah, do not commit any sins. So there are two groups of people. Some are rebellious and some are obedient. And of course, as for those people who are rebellious, their abode is the hellfire. And as for those people who are obedient and who protect their souls, who care for their souls, their abode is the Jannah, the paradise. And I also said that God has given us the capacity to tell the difference between right and wrong and between truth and falsehood. And of course, we have not been left wandering on a crossroad. Never. لا إكراه في الدين قد تبين الرشد من الغي فمن يكفر بالطاغوت ويؤمن بالله فقد استمسك بالعروة الأثقى. Of course, قد تبين الرشد من الغي. The right is clearly distinguished from wrong. The truth is clear from the falsehood. That's what the Quran says. And of course, as I said, we are not here to explain or to interpret the verses of the Quran. Of course, I am trying to give you some ideas into what the religious teachings are about a better life. Because at the end of the day, we are going to go to the next world. Our eternal abode is the next world, of course. So when we speak about life, the real life is not this world, the life we live in this world. The real life begins in the afterworld. And so we have to prepare ourselves for the real life, for that eternal abode. And that's why the Quran says, قَدْ تَبَيَّنَ الرُّشْدُ مِنَ الْغَيَ. Of course, the right has been clarified and distinguished from the wrong, the truth from the falsehood, of course. And we as human beings have the volition, the faculty of reason. Of course, every individual has been gifted with the faculty of reason. And that is the best capacity, the most important capacity, the most important faculty that distinguishes man from other animals, from other creatures, from other animate beings. The right path is clear from the wrong one, of course. Allah does not force anyone to follow the right path. And He does not compel anyone to traverse the right path. There's no doubt about it. لا إكراه في الدين. There's no compulsion in religion. If Allah were to force human beings, what would be the meaning of justice? Justice would have been meaningless. If He were to force every individual to follow the right path, then hell and heaven, hell and paradise would be meaningless. Resurrection would have no meaning. Because we are compelled, we are like ants, like other creatures who act on instincts. That's not the case with human beings. Of course, human beings have the willpower, the volition. And that makes us different from other animals, from other creatures.
We were given so many prizes. We changed the desert into oases. We built buildings of different lengths and sizes. And we felt so very satisfied. We bought and bought and couldn't stop buying. We gave charity to the poor cause we couldn't stand the crying. We thought we paid our dues, but in fact, to ourselves we're just lying. Oh, I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. I'm walking with my head lowered in shame for my place. I'm walking with my head lowered for my race. Yes, it's easy to blame everything on the West, when in fact our focus should be on ourselves. Is it satisfied? Is Allah satisfied? Is Allah satisfied?
We are intelligent. We are a volitional creature. We have free will. And these are the two main characteristics that man has. There is a saying, I remember, there is a saying from the commander of faithful Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, who says, إِنَّ اللَّهَ خَصَّ الْمَلَائِكَةَ بِالْعَقْلِ دُونَ الشَّهْوَةِ وَالْغَضَبِ وَخَصَّ الْحَيْوَانَاتِ بِهِمَا دُونَهُ وَلَكِنْ شَرَّفَ الْإِنسَانِ. The hadith is lengthy, but because some of our audience may not make sense of the hadith, I would like to just explain, to give the concept of the hadith. Based on this hadith, God has clarified everything for us. He has clarified the road for us, which leads to either hell or heaven. Both roads are clear, and there's nothing in this map ambiguous or murky or dark. Everything has been clarified meticulously by Allah. When you open the map, Allah says, these two entrances lead to either the hellfire or to paradise. Allah says in the verse which I recited, Allah says, Tagha, Tagha, wa athara al-hayat ad-dunya. So these are two major highways that leads to the hellfire. Tagha, persistently, willfully rebelling and transgressing against Allah. And of course, a person who rebels against God and who transgresses the bounds, the limits prescribed by Allah, then of course his eternal abode is the hellfire. And of course, the saying from Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam, Inna Allah khassal malaikata bil aql dun ash-shahwati wal ghadab, God the Almighty has distinguished the angels with reason. It means that the angels have reason only, have intellect, aql. Dun ash-shahwati wal ghadab, they do not have lust and they do not have wrath. Ghadab means anger. The angels do not become angry. The angels do not have lust. وَخَصَّ الْحَيْوَانَاتِ بِهِمَا, and God distinguished the animals, the quadruped, the beasts, with shahwa and ghadab. You know, the animals have lust and they have anger. These two faculties are there. But وَلَكِنْ شَرَّفَ الْإِنسَانِ, God honored human being by giving human being both the faculty of reason and shahwa and ghadab, both of them. You can see man has the power, the faculty of reason, and he has lust, he has anger, he becomes angry. Inshallah, we will carry on this discussion in the following episode. Until then, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Your mercy, your love is all I need.
It's all I need.
All I need.
It's all I need.
It's all I need.
Love is all I need.
All I need.
Love is all I need.
Oh,
your love is all I need. To be
all I need.
And I know that you see how much you need. You mean to me, 'cause your love is all I need. To be all I can be. I know that you see how much you mean to me.
Your love is all I need.
The front line, part 2.
24 engines, definitely a lot of stuff in the boat. Looks like he might be dumping.
The annual income from organized crime and illegal drug trade in Europe is estimated at 230 billion euros. All kinds of illicit drugs are used.